May it please the Court, Susan Robertson on behalf of Appellant Branson Ear, Nose, and Throat. This case is now before this Court because the Court accepted transfer following an opinion by the Southern District, wherein it reversed the trial court judgment that had previously been entered in favor of plaintiffs following a jury verdict. The issue before the Court is whether plaintiffs made a submissible case when they did not elicit expert testimony defining the concept and term of standard of care. Although it is my opponent that asked for transfer, it is our position this case presents a significant opportunity for this Court to continue what has been the tradition to require that the jury understand the legal parameters for which they determine negligence for health care providers. What is in this case is expert testimony of the particular medical procedure that the standard of care may have warranted. What is not in this case is expert testimony defining for the jury what the term standard of care means.
How do we know the jury didn't understand?
Because the jury wasn't informed. It has long been the law in Missouri that there is a distinction between general negligence and cases submitted against health care providers. It has long been the opinion of these courts that lay people do not understand medicine, and they thereby do not understand how to determine if the provision of medical treatment was negligent.
But your opponent will say that that evidence did come into trial, did come in front of the jury. So how do we know, how do we get into the heads of the jurors to know whether or not they truly understood based upon what was presented?
It has been the history in this state that if you do not have expert testimony that defines for the jury the parameters for which the standard of care term is defined, they have to be determined to have not understood it, because the practice of medicine is something lay people don't understand. And reading 1106 has previously been the law is not sufficient to educate them. There are two things that the plaintiffs must submit by expert testimony. The medicine itself, that would be the surgical procedure in this case. What is the standard of care under the facts that exist for this particular plaintiff? But in order to understand that, they also have to have testimony that says what standard of care means, that it is something that is an industry standard, if you say it that way, that they must be told that doctors and other health care providers operate within what is called standard of care, and that's an objective standard. They have to be told that doctors in rendering treatment are held to the standard of degree of skill and learning ordinarily used under the same or similar circumstances by members of the defendant's profession.
Counsel, I understand that, you know, we didn't ask that, in this case, they didn't ask that nice defined question that we always ask and that the expert always says yes to, that may or may not be meaningless to the jury. But here, if I'm reading the Court of Appeals opinion correctly, they asked the defendant, all right, that would be a mistake, that would be a surgical error, that would be something that would be in violation of your duties as a surgeon, true? The answer is definitely. What doesn't that get done for the jury that otherwise would be done if we asked the question in a magical way? Or maybe magic is the wrong, in our traditional way of asking that question so that we know it's done in accordance with case law.
Two answers to that, Judge Price. First, this appeal is not about a mechanistic requirement to repeat 1106 or ask the question, and if you eliminate a word or two or a comma, you don't make a submissible case. It is about the fundamental concept that somehow, through expert testimony, the jury is told that this is an objective standard. Somebody that is an expert, whether it be the defendant or a plaintiff's expert, must give the legal parameters by which the jury determines if the medical procedure or the failure to provide that was negligent.
Then the question in this particular case was whether the standard of care required a total thyroidectomy, right?
That's the medical standard of care issue. That's
right.
Correct, but, Judge Wolf.
But in your brief, there's a quote from this transcript with Dr. Bate. And you told me that is the question, and that's the standard of care when you have thyroid cancer is to remove the entire thyroid, to do a total thyroid corectomy. Correct? Answer, you are correct. I removed the right lobe, determined that there was cancer, and then I removed the left lobe. I mean, doesn't that establish the standard of care for the jury?
It establishes, and it is the most important distinction submitted by this particular defendant as well as all other medical defendants. There is a critical distinction that this court has the opportunity to explain. The medical standard of care, the particular operative procedure, the treatment to be rendered to the particular plaintiff, it was and is present in this case, never been disputed. And that is plaintiff's position. Why would I need to back up and ask something as a fundamental question in the beginning if everybody understands the actual medical procedure to be utilized in the case? That was the biggest point of argument in the appellate court below. It is one of the elements to make a submissible case to explain the medical procedure under the standard of care, but under it and around it and through it is the legal framework for the jury to understand the failure to do that constitutes negligence.
Well, what I'd really like to know, I suppose, and I was really kind of getting to it, is what exactly is missing?
It is testimony by an expert, either the expert for the plaintiff or the defendant, that says the standard of care that governs the medical profession is objective. It's not my personal standard. It's not the personal standard of the defendant. The practice of medicine is governed by an objective standard. That's how doctors perform what they do.
You know, the problem with this is I know it's not there in the way we traditionally ask it, but in the question, Judge Wolf, the question was, the standard of care is to remove the total thyroid, and the answer is you're correct. The defendant here, the doctor, is an expert. He testifies as to the standard of care. It's to remove it all. The plaintiff's case is it wasn't all removed. And then, you know, at the very end, he has, but you left it. That would be a mistake. You know, I'm after the same thing Judge Wolf is. They don't say there's an objective standard for the profession, but the doctor is saying it's error, it's a mistake,
and
that is the standard. How do we get around that?
Well, that is what this case presents the opportunity, because the opinions that look at it, there are many opinions that have been brought that should have never been brought, where the question was clearly asked in the manner it should have been asked. Those are easy to distinguish. There are the other cases that talk about whether or not you're really talking about admissibility of opinions on reasonable degree of medical certainty on causation. Those are distinguishable.
Yeah, what, and there's no objection here that a proper foundation hasn't been laid or a proper...
It is really...
He needed to say, and everybody else would agree, that it was a mistake, in effect.
What is missing is testimony from an expert that allows the jury to understand that deviating from what was articulated and agreed to be the standard of care was, when it wasn't met, was thereby negligent.
Well, why isn't that agreement it would be a mistake by the defendant sufficient to meet that?
Thus far in this state and other states across the country, it has been the requirement that the jury can't make that finding of negligence without understanding that you're basing it on the objective standard that guides the profession.
But why isn't this objective? I mean, when a doctor says it's a mistake, it would be an error, but how could he say everyone else does it? Or that's the standard, we all make mistakes, this is the kind of mistake we all make. And when he says it's a mistake, the jury can make, and I think common sense would say, well, he's saying it's the standard of care has been breached.
Traditionally, the cases have said if the expert has not articulated that opinion is based on the proper standard, the jury doesn't know what it's based on.
Well, of course, there's a little thing extra here. There's that sentence, that would be something that would be in violation of your duties as a surgeon. That's more general than just his own personal practice. And don't you need to object at that point and say, wait a minute, that's not the proper form to ask this question if you're then going to take it up on appeal?
Well, that is one of the other issues that rests before this court, is whether you're going to say it is a matter where you should object, because it is somewhat of an interesting issue to say, well, why shouldn't everybody's there? Why shouldn't the defendant, voir dire the expert, or ask upon what is your standard, what is your understanding of standard of care? But it is traditionally has not been determined to be a matter of admissibility. It is just one of the required elements of submissibility.
It's relevant, but you're saying it's not sufficient.
Correct.
And actually, we used to ask the question in the hypothetical. I mean, that was almost, in most cases, I think it was required. Maybe I'm not old enough to remember that, but I do. And then they passed this expert witness statute that says that you can do it in the form of a hypothetical or otherwise. So people moved away from the hypothetical, but the hypothetical established that as part of its, basically recited your whole case and said, doctor, isn't that right? I mean, that. So we've moved away from that. And the question is, you're saying we've moved too far away from that. Because the hypothetical created the structure for it.
Well, and to take your comments a little further, what is the harm in making sure this standard is met by expert testimony? It shouldn't be viewed as a trap. It shouldn't be, perhaps, with due respect, this court's opinion that the question must be asked in a particular way or the plaintiff has waived it. It's the concept that the jury understand upon which they're going to base their negligence. There are disappointing and factually distinguishable cases that go on and on and on. But the fundamental proposition is, are you going to lessen the required elements of a plaintiff's case in medical negligence by allowing them just to go to the particular medical procedure at issue and seeing whether or not that procedure, from a medical standpoint, was or was not done in the manner in which it should have been done? How do you know that without...
Well, but you had the testimony that it was negligent, that it didn't meet the standard by the defendant himself.
The jury can't make that determination. Where's the harm in continuing to uphold the requirement that expert testimony be defined for the jury to understand what is in if the instruction, which thus far the courts have said is not sufficient to explain it?
I'm still not understanding. I mean, if the testimony was the standard of care is a total thyroidectomy, I didn't meet it. I agree that if I didn't meet it, that's a mistake. It doesn't meet my standard. That would be in violation of my duties as a surgeon. What is left that you have to tell the jury?
May I answer the question? These two doctors may or may have agreed between themselves on what the standard was. The jury had no way of knowing the appropriate context to put that in, as the instructions exist under the state to decide.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court.
Counsel, the thing that struck me from your opposing counsel's brief is in the reply brief, and it's on 7, and I think that this goes to some of the questions that were asked. She says that in this case, Dr. Nelson may or may not have been testifying on what others in the same or similar circumstances would have done. And then she explains that how is it that the jury knows that that Dr. Nelson's opinion is based on anything more than his own personal opinion?
Well, there are a few ways. First of all, if the jury presumptively listened to all of his testimony where he discussed the reasons why you treat a 45-year-old man with thyroid cancer the same and why you take out the entire thyroid.
Well, that could be just as easily his own personal opinion on the standard of care.
Well, every case up to now, the doctor has given an indicia that he is applying a personal standard that has been reversed.
Well, I thought that the cases up to now require them to say, and I'm testifying on the basis of what others in my profession would have done in the same or similar circumstances. Not necessarily my own personal opinion, but what others in the profession.
Well, didn't Nelson do that? He said the standard treatment is a total thyroidectomy.
Yes.
So he said what the standard of care was, but what you didn't have was someone saying, and we would all agree it's negligent not to follow the standard of care. But he said personally, it would not meet my duties as a surgeon. But it seems like here, unlike those other cases, you had testimony that the standard of care was generally, not just his view.
That's correct. The case law says you do not have to recite 1106, but the jury needs to be informed that the doctor is testifying about a general standard of care. This doctor...
But what the definition of a general standard of care is, too, and it seems to me that you have to tell them that that means what others would have done in the same or similar circumstances, and that what we're testifying to is not just on my personal opinion or Dr. Nelson's.
I believe that in the other cases that we've cited, such as Riddell, such as LaRose, Pettit, in all of those cases, the magic words that the court is inquiring about were not used.
I agree with you.
Looked through the testimony and said it is clear from the gist of this man's testimony by using terms such as standard, such as accepted, and such as surgeon, as this doctor did, that he wasn't testifying about what he personally did.
So you just think that saying accepted standards is the same thing as saying what others in the same or similar circumstances would have done?
Yeah, well, you know, what I've done is there's the practical aspect of what you see a lot today is a lawyer will get up and they'll put the expert on and they'll say, who are you? What are you here for? And, doctor, I want an agreement that as we go through your testimony, when you voice an opinion, that's to a reasonable degree of medical certainty, okay? And if I use the phrase or you use the phrase standard of care, that means that degree of skill and learning ordinarily used in the same or similar.
Did that happen here?
That didn't happen here, and the reason why it didn't happen here is usually from there they go into, now let's go through your 25-page resume, and then ultimately, did he violate the standard of care? That is not, in my opinion, communicating to a jury. What I wanted that jury to know when we got to the end is that in this case, for a surgeon operating on a thyroid, that you can't leave half of it, and you don't teach residents that, and you don't do that as a surgeon. And that was the question that was asked. And I made a chart that compares Dr. Nelson's opinion.
Do you have that in print anywhere? Do you have the...
Yes, Your Honor, I do. On the
way in, give it to the marshal, if you would.
I noticed a mistake that I had 10 of 6.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's understandable.
But
now, where I, you know, the one thing that is there a place you can point me to in the record where it is clearly stated that this is the standard of care by all physicians doing this type of a procedure?
In my opinion, yes. The question that I asked, where I asked him...
Was that the question to Nelson, that long question to Nelson?
Yes, about a surgeon. And let me tell you why. The only thing that I didn't include in my question was skill and learning. Now, the law does not engage in unreasonable presumptions. So to feel that I was not encompassing 1106, one would have to conclude that Dr. Nelson was speaking about an unskilled, untrained surgeon. And he wasn't. He was speaking.
Or he could be testifying about his own personal standards of conduct.
If I ask him, in your personal opinion, but would you do this, that would be a valid point. But I ask him about a surgeon performing this operation for these very reasons. Now, if you step aside from that, which I think we've set that out in the brief and how that does, in fact, mirror 1106, and in my opinion, does so in a case-specific, communicative fashion versus reciting a rote definition at the start of testimony that nobody understands. You know, if you're going to argue something...
Counsel, I'm confident that you could explain to the jury in closing and tie it all up where they would understand all that.
It would take more time.
You're eminently qualified to do that.
Let me ask you this. Here, the questions that went, that you asked to this expert and to Dr. Bay, are about the total removal of a thyroid.
Correct.
Everybody's agreeing, yeah, you got to take it all out. But then Dr. Nelson also said that you don't get all of it. There are microscopic evidence of thyroid tissue left. And then the defense of Dr. Bay is, I thought I got all of it. I got most of it. And is that, and then it grew back, that little bit. Grew back is his testimony. Is there evidence about how much and how little and what the standard of care is on that?
Absolutely. The agreement between both Dr. Nelson and Dr. Bays was that you remove all macroscopic or visible tissue. There may be microscopic tissue that is there, but microscopic tissue cannot grow back to a full-size lobe of a thyroid. Dr. Bays admitted that in his examination. And moving to that, the law has always been that the defendant can admit that they breached their duty of care, and that in and of itself is sufficient. If you look at the case of DeLisi, that was a case where the defendant doctor admitted that the only time he would not give antibiotics is if it was, A, a clean wound or the person was allergic. And the court said he thus recognized the duty that if he knew the wound was dirty, he had to give antibiotics, so it's solely a fact issue. He wasn't asked whether he violated the standard of care. He did not go as far as Dr. Bayes in this case, but yet the court found that he made a submissible case because he recognized his duty, and thereafter it was solely a fact issue. If you look at the Pinky case, where the defendant testifies that the wrapping, the goal of putting a dressing on a hand is not to compromise circulation. The court ruled that recognizing that duty, and that was his duty, thereafter turned it into a fact issue of whether or not this person had the dressing wrapped so tightly that it compromised circulation.
Both Court of Appeals cases.
Yes, Your Honor, that's true. They did not go as far as this doctor, who not only recognized that, A, it was a standard of care to remove both lobes of the thyroid, but B, he was attempting to do that, and C, if he left one entire lobe of the thyroid, he would have violated his duties under these circumstances to this patient and possibly committed medical fraud.
One of my concerns here is that by going through the transcript, we piece together most of the things. It looks like most of those things are there. But there's not one clear question and answer where we can say, yep, they met their standard of proof. And if we walk away from that, then it's very easy for us as appellate judges to say, there's the question, there's the answer, he's met the standard. And it's not hard to ask that question at trial. I mean, that's a pretty simple question. It might get in the way of jury communication, but it's a simple way to know you've done it. It's a simple way for the other side to know what they've got to work on the doctor about. Now, under your, if we affirm this, then it's going to be, we've got to wade through the transcript, we've got to piece this stuff together, we don't know what's there. Is this something that you're arguing should be limited to the doctor when he's making admissions? Because here you have the doctor admitting to a lot of stuff that might not be quite as clear if it's coming from somebody else.
Well, that would be true. I would, from a personal opinion, say just the opposite.
Okay. Yeah.
This is a foundational issue. In every other foundational issue that is before a court, the defendant has adequate protection because they can either object, they can ask to voir dire the witness, or they can cover in cross-examination if they have any question whatsoever about the standard.
Yeah, but it's still your burden, though. It's still your burden.
It is my burden. And in my opinion, I met the burden in two separate ways by asking the doctor about the standard of care for a surgeon, and instead of saying same or similar or member of the defendant's profession, I said a surgeon who's doing this operation for this reason. And to me, that is what the law should favor over a generalized statement of definition. For example, defendant's profession is particularly vague. What is the defendant's profession? This particular doctor was an ear, nose, and throat surgeon. But would it be the same standard for a pediatrician? I think if you're going to argue a lack of clarity or overgeneralization, you could do so if you rotely state MAI 1106 versus ask a case-specific question about a surgeon.
You're saying that you did more than you needed to do by going into the particulars of this.
I believed at that time that what I did was the appropriate thing, given what the instruction ultimately would be given to the jury.
So we don't need to take into account Dr. Bayes' testimony?
I believe it. Well, if the question to Dr. Nelson is, as I feel it is, sufficient, then Dr. Bayes' testimony is simply supportive and in total agreement. If you feel that the question that I ask of Dr. Nelson is not sufficient and that his lead-in testimony testifying about what is done in these cases in treatment of people with this condition isn't sufficient to satisfy a general standard of care, then if you look at Dr. Bayes' testimony and you look at Laddish and Pinky and DeLisi, then that in and of itself went far beyond those cases where the doctor's simple recognition of a duty made a fact issue. In this case, Dr. Bayes not only recognized the duty, but said, given the fact that the surgeon in St. Louis 4 months later removed an intact thyroid that weighed 8.2 grams, that would indicate and be consistent with him leaving an entire thyroid lobe, which would definitely be in violation of his duties to this patient. That testimony in and of itself satisfies the standard of care requirement, at least as it is enunciated under Riddell, under DeLisi, under Pinky and under Lattish, the subsequent part of Lattish, where they discuss the fact that the doctor recognized the importance of advising the patient as to certain self-care following this surgery. They said that was sufficient to establish a fact issue of whether or not he so instructed that plaintiff in that case. But this Dr. Bays went well beyond that. He admitted that the thyroid doesn't regrow. He admitted that removing a full lobe of a thyroid 4 months later is consistent with him leaving it. And if, in fact, he left it while trying to do a total thyroidectomy, which was the standard of care, then he violated his duties to the patient. None of those cases did they have testimony that far, but yet they found that that doctor's simple recognition of the general duty made a fact issue. And so if you combine both of them, you've got my position is we met the standard of care in either way. If you read Dr. Nelson's testimony, it's very clear that he was not testifying about an individual standard of care. And if you look at the cases that they cite, it's not that they didn't ask the question in the way that 1106 says. It's that the individual testimony is obviously not speaking about a general standard of care. You've got doctors in those cases that are saying, this is what I would have done. This is how I would have addressed that problem. And then in another case, you've got a doctor who says, well, and in Lattish, they're given hypotheticals, and the hypotheticals weren't proven by evidence. So it wasn't that the question wasn't asked. It was that there were specifics about their testimony that indicated they were not testifying about a general standard of care. That doesn't exist here. They haven't pointed to one syllable or one statement of Dr. Nelson's testimony that indicated he was applying anything other than a general standard of care that is taught in medical school and that is agreed to by Dr. Bays in this particular case. But I guess the thing, the final thing is, these questions, if you apply them to case authority, come well within the case authority. But this is a repeated problem that is coming up over and over again. And in other kinds,
it's easy to cure.
It is easy to cure, and a lot of lawyers do ask the rote question right at the start, and then they go through the doctor's CV, and then they go through everything else,
and then off at the end.
And then they go through the question. Yeah. I don't think it's just to me that is a way to do it. That's a way to be safe, but it's not a way, in my opinion, to communicate what is at issue in this particular case with this particular patient, this particular doctor, and this particular procedure. I would personally rather do it in this type of question, although I won't probably do that way in the future.
Unless you just like to come visit us a lot. Thank you, counsel.
My time is up. Thank you.
May it please the Court, in answer to some of the important questions tendered to my opponent, it would be disappointing if the Court reached an opinion based solely on the facts, because there is one thing that Mr. Garner and I agree on, and probably this Court does too. These cases do appear, and they're frustrating. And there is an easy way to solve it. It is for this Court to impress upon everyone the significance of providing the objective standard through expert testimony. It's not difficult to achieve. There is no reason for it not to be in there, because the risks of it not being required or not being present are devastating to the medical profession. They do their actions under the standard of care. It's defined in 1106. The jury has read that definition and the instruction to determine what negligence is.
It sounds like you're saying we have to go back to magic words, though.
No. It would be easy. It would certainly, there is no reason why the Court can't advocate for expert testimony to be admitted as part of a plaintiff's admissible case in a medical negligence that provides testimony on this concept, this issue. You don't even have in this case them asking, is what your opinion based on, is that objective? Is that what's done in the industry? You can do it.
Why doesn't the words as standard practice equate to, is that what's done in the industry?
Traditionally, that has been answered by saying using standard of care, accepted practice, proper practice, can't provide itself a definition for the jury of what that means. Look at Dr. Nelson's testimony, so the proper procedure for what Mr. Hickman's diagnosis was. He says, you have an opinion if he did a total thyroidectomy. He says he did not. He was asked, does that meet the standard of care for a surgeon? No. Why? Because it says, well, if you go take out the whole thing, you leave half the thing in, that's not what you're supposed to do. That poses the identical problem that was raised by...
But in answer to Hickman, he said the general practice in recent years and your experience with regard to this type of problem is to perform a total thyroidectomy. That's correct. The standard treatment is a total thyroidectomy. That's not personal. That's saying the general practice.
Well, and that is the difficulty that both sides say has existed. The way to avoid this difficulty is to clearly articulate that you need to present the two different definitions. The problem comes when they go to the medical procedure, exactly what Mr. Garner's advocating. Why bother with this? Go right to the procedure. The danger of that is that you have in this case two doctors saying this is what you do in this particular case, but no overriding context for the jury to understand that's what everybody does within the profession.
Why didn't that say that, what I just read to you?
Because it didn't provide, and are you reading from Dr. Bays or Dr. Nelson?
Dr. Nelson. But either one. But, I mean, when he says this is what you do, total thyroidectomy is the standard, not just saying that's personally what I do. I'm not clear why that doesn't meet that objective test.
Well, and that's where that's what I believe both sides want to avoid, is to have people interpreting particular sentences to see whether or not they were intended to be by this expert to be personal or not. And that should be what this court wants to avoid.
Sorry, and I've taken you over time. I'm sorry. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor, for the extra time.
Thank you both. Very helpful argument.